What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Movie Schmovie
Movie Schmove
podcast.
Episode what?
Number
33. Some amazing people have that number. Patrick Ewing, Grant Hill, and some other players. Oh, Scottie Pippen.
Scottie Pippen.
Also had the number 33.
What would Jordan be without Pippen?
He would be a nobody.
Let's be honest.
He would be shite.
So yeah, episode number 33, we're going to be talking about a film that I know I have been looking forward to for a long time. It's been in the can for a long time, had a lot of troubles getting itself onto the screen for a long time, and a movie that you, I think you were interested in seeing, but you were a little apprehensive because the genre is not your cup of tea normally, right?
Not my forte.
Okay. Before we get to the feature, just to kind of tease it a little bit, we're going to do our Mighty Minute breakdown. And this week we're actually going to be talking about a film that is finally finding its way to theaters in a different way, and that is the new film Bully, a documentary from Lee Hirsch, basically, as the title puts it, about bullying in the United States and across the world. Documentary that received a... an R rating.
Right,
R rating. At the end of February.
In L.A. and New York.
Yeah.
The bigger markets, and then a couple high-profile actors and stars and even some politicians fought to get this rating kind of lowered because it was a really important thing. Once you get the hard R rating, it's harder for it to reach a bigger audience.
Especially when you're talking about a film about kids being bullied. I mean,
yeah.
Letting kids identify with this and know they're not alone, it's a really important topic in today's world. And,
right.
You know... giving a film a rating that pretty much prevents its, not target audience, but one of its target audiences from even being able to see it is pretty ridiculous. And basically at the cost of, you know, curse words, you know, like the fact that there's so many F words in this film is pretty much the reason that it received the rating.
Right.
A couple weeks ago, then in March, Weinstein Company, and, you know, through this whole thing, Harvey Weinstein is a power in the, you know, in Hollywood, in the movie, motion picture industry. And you kind of always knew something was going to go their way just because of the way he kind of, you know, pulls his weight around from what right. you can see on TV and in the news. And kind of an interesting move. The filmmaker decided that they were going to release Bully unrated almost in protest for the MPAA's R rating since they weren't willing to lower it to PG-13. And, you know, that pretty much would restrict it to, like, art house cinemas, independent houses, and things like that because most major chains like AMC and Regal and, you know, Cinemark – they have policies that prevent them from screening unrated movies. So obviously it limited it from getting a lot of exposure. I think AMC even came on board and said they would show the film with like written permission from parents for kids that wanted to see it, even though it was unrated, like almost making a special permission, which was almost like a turn for the worse for the studio at a point. Cause they thought, you know, with theaters not being able to play it, it might kind of make a statement to the ratings board. And I think the statement was made, you know, earlier this week or last week, they announced that, you know, they had agreed to lower the rating to PG-13, like we said before, basically at the cost of, you know, some F words. Like they were able to keep a very crucial scene in the film that has to do with, I think, him, one of the main kids being bullied on a school bus.
Apparently, it's supposed to go on for a long time. The scene's supposed to be pretty lengthy.
Right.
So I'm glad it happened. It's necessary. Because, I mean, the good part about it all is that a PG-13 might mean, I know it sounds a little weird, but like a class trip to see it, a class screening at some point. You know what I mean? Like, I think that it's important that people know how serious bullying is. And it's weird because with cyberbullying, people act like this is the new phenomenon or something, but it's always existed. Little people always get beat up. And to have this kind of brought to light is a really important thing. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I think a film like this and being the hot topic that it is, eventually it's a movie that, if not a field trip, it's going to be a movie that's shown in schools, you know, to classes. And I mean, you know, movies, you know, Michael Moore's films are shown in schools now. Like, you know, a lot of the documentaries out there right now either receive special permission, but I mean, making it PG-13 not only makes it obviously more commercial for the studio, but at the root of it, more accessible. Let kids know that they're not alone. You know, the filmmaker admitted that he was bullied as a kid. A lot of people that, you know, I know, even, you know, ourselves, bullied as kids at some point or another.
Yeah.
it's a pretty real thing, and it's really great that a film like this is getting the wide distribution now this weekend. So make sure you check around your local theaters, local showtimes, and see where Bully is playing in a theater near you. We're going to go check it out this weekend, and we'll be sure to talk about it later, but definitely do yourself a favor and
Bully.
See it.
See it, please.
So now on to our feature review this week. We're going to be talking about Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods.
Now, I mean, like I said, I've been looking forward to this. I mean, I know this movie is going on 3 years old. You know, it was made back before MGM went bankrupt, and it's right. kind of been caught up in all these legalities of them filing Chapter 11 and, you know, basically being stuck in the middle of all that crap. But, you know, now kind of coming out, I think through Lionsgate, I've been waiting a long time for it. I mean, I'm not a uber fan of Joss Whedon. I mean, I right. like, you know, his involvement in things like, you know, Buffy and Angel and all these good things and, you know, Firefly, Serenity and all these things. But I almost was more drawn to it for just the genre. I mean, horror films, I love them.
Yeah.
And to say this is only a horror film is a huge injustice of the film.
Yeah.
But I mean, you... Not a big fan of horror.
No,
not. I mean, I know we talk about a lot of horror.
It's a very specific reason, man. Like, I think that horror kind of plays on a lot of really strange things that I'm not a fan of. Just the
like
women being weak, stumbling all over the place, and stabbed up. It's normally more women victims than dude victims,
right?
So that never sits well with me in that type of movie.
So you don't like women being the victim.
No, man, makes me feel.
Ladies, good. Ronald is single,
right,
and ready to mingle.
Right, so that bothers me a little bit. So, when I see movies that are a little less about that, I enjoy them. But movies that emphasize that kind of make me uncomfortable. I don't know why, man. And
it's funny you say that because in most horror films, usually the hero, the protagonist, and a lot of times ends up being the female.
Right, but how many women have to die?
It's just as many as men.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes. I don't know.
Sometimes.
We need to do a count. But it's so funny because usually the woman is the one that ends up being the winner.
And it's so gruesome, man. Like, they just, I don't know. It's just kind of messed up to me.
Okay.
So, I came in this. All right. So, let me give you a little background on this whole thing. So,
Josh I love Whedon, Ronald's background.
Joss Whedon. I am, I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The original movie that was done in 1992. I know he wrote that.
Yeah.
And then he later on went on to do the TV show. I'm also kind of a fan of the TV show from the episodes I've seen. His dialogue is a little too, I don't know, it borders on corny a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't quite figure out why he has the following that he does. But I get it. He does this whole, like, intelligent banter thing really well, and comedic situations are done really well. As seen in shows like Firefly and things like that. So I get it. So when I came into this with some apprehension, to be completely honest with you. But I guess we should talk about what the movie's about in general so that we can get some sort of background.
I mean, I think we talked about this before, but without giving too much away, I mean, marketing for the film's done a really good job of this and not really talking too much about what it's about. I mean, you have five college-aged stereotype teenagers going or whatever into a cabin in the woods and shit goes bad. I mean, you don't want to give away too much. I mean, and it's going to be a kind of a tightrope for us to talk about it here on the show.
Yeah.
You know, without giving away too much. But I think, I mean, what you see on the TV is really what you probably should know going in to see the movie so that you don't really kind of get
anything. Don't do any extra
research.
Yeah. You will be sorely disappointed because the whole surprise in this, the surprise element is definitely what comes about after you kind of get into the movie. Because it is like Steve said, it's presented like kind of a typical Cabin in the Woods movie where, you know, killer comes out, destroys these people.
Right.
But you surely find out that it's a little more than that.
Yeah, I mean, and you can see the poster, and I mean, there's even clips in the trailers that kind of show that something else is at play in the film. And it kind of all sets off in the beginning of the movie where you're kind of introduced to Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford's characters.
Right, who I love in this movie.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome. And, I mean, they basically work for... You basically, in that first scene, and it's really all we should really discuss, is that, you know, you get the impression that they work for some sort of big company, You know, they're kind of, you know, they're suits, you know, they're scientists, or they're something of that sort. Mm-hmm. And they are referencing other countries participating in some sort of, you know, observational study type deal kind of thing. Yeah. And you kind of, you see that little piece, and then we jump into our story that we all know and love from horror films.
Right.
And you kind of just take off from there and slowly start to realize that it becomes less and less your standard horror film, and that little piece that we saw in the beginning takes over the story, and you kind of see how this horror film that we went to see is mainly a little piece in a bigger puzzle that they're controlling.
Right. It's... So I guess that the way we should explain it is kind of like the sort of fishbowl thing, like the where we see the fish, and then we see the bowl,
right,
and then we see the people, and then we see the planet, and that's kind of the scale of how this movie is, and it's so weird because I don't want to give it away, but it I think that one of the things that has to that we have to let you know is that Josh Whedon has a very interesting way of, he has some social commentary in this movie about violence in society and the way we view things as a whole. And it's done in a way that I thought at first I'm going to be honest, man, I was kind of weirded out by it. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, what is this? Obviously this is absurd. Like, and Joss Whedon has a really big habit of having absurdity in his stuff. Absurd dialogue, absurd circumstances. Sometimes to make a point. And I had a fear that you and I would kind of come out of this movie going, ah, so that's what he means. Yeah. But I kind of feel like that's insulting at the same time.
Right.
I don't want it to be like, he's sharp, we're sharp, we get what's going on. And that's the lore of this movie. I think the lore of it is the dance between comedy and horror that happens so often in this movie.
Right.
And done well enough that it didn't bother me. And I'm normally pretty turned off by stuff like that.
Right.
It was solid in that way. It did have some shortcomings, but what'd you think about it? That kind of...
You know, honestly, the more... leaving the theater, I literally had a moment, and I was, like, kind of like, oh, like you kind of were saying, but it was also like a, huh?
Yeah, right.
You know, it was like a roller coaster, like, huh? You know, like, right. What's... Because, I mean, it is all... It's in a way, it's all over the place in terms of the genre bending. I mean, because, like I said, it's a horror film. There's comedy, there's thrills, there's little sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all kinds of shit going on in this movie. I think, and what you really need to know, I mean... Yeah, you talk about Joss Whedon, and even if you know anything about Drew Goddard, this is his first film that he directed, but I mean, he's been involved with a lot of stuff with Joss Whedon, like Angel and Buffy, but also with J.J. Abrams, like films like Cloverfield, and,
right.
You know, things like that, and even working on shows that do a lot of genre bending, like with Alias and Lost, even.
Right.
You know, so kind of going down those alleys where you make that unexpected turn is really what they both are really good at, and that's a lot of that happens in this movie because I think the unpredictability of it is really what they were going for. You know, I think I've read a lot about, you know, their thoughts on the film and their intentions, and a lot of it had to do with the way the horror genre was going, like, I guess towards, like, that torture porn kind of horror.
Right.
Like the Hostels and the Human Centipedes and all these things, you know, and, you know, you kind of are at one point rooting that somebody stays alive, but then you kind of want to see him die, but you don't want to see him act like idiots.
Yeah. I figured out why I liked it, and I figured out why I don't like it. Why I like it is that at the heart of it, it is Scream on a lot of levels. It is a commentary about the horror genre and society and a bunch of other things. So in that way, I guess if in the movie way, it's similar to Scream. It almost reminds me, almost the scale is upped a little bit, almost the way Watchmen is. Watchmen is a very, very complex commentary on the way comic books used to be.
Right.
And kind of parodies it and adds this depth to a genre that sometimes doesn't have depth.
Like, it seems shallow.
Right. And very shallow. Like, really undeveloped characters. It kind of takes that and then it gets absurd and more absurd and more absurd and more absurd and more absurd, which at first I was like, fuck, this is bothering me. But I get it. I get what it is at the heart of it. It is like Scream. It is like...
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Scream, because, I mean, that's something, like, Scream's one of my all-time favorite movies, right. Favorite horror films, whatever, because of what it did with the genre. It kind of took elements of it and turned it on its ear. You know, it took mm-hmm. the elements and literally had the characters talking about these elements, analyzing horror films in a horror film, which I thought was genius, and that's why I love that movie, and it did mm-hmm. that for the genre. And, I mean, this does that in a different way, though. I think it does it more so about... I guess the conventions of the stereotypes is not so much that they're talking about it themselves. Right. There's a couple of scenes in the film where they do kind of say it out loud almost, but and it makes it even funnier because they're saying it out loud, but they're not even aware of it still.
Right.
You know, and that's what this film is going for. This film is going for those things that even when something may be possibly being manipulated by an outside force and is being shoved down these kids' throats, like, this should not happen. You should not do this.
Right.
Yet they're still giving this choice to this kid or these teenagers, and they're still doing the bad thing.
Yeah.
That's that point where, like, you're rooting for them, but then you also want to see them make a mistake, but you don't want to see them act like idiots. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, which yeah. is where the control piece comes in. And that's kind of where we have to tread that line in what we give away with the movie, because, like, when you get through the first, second, third act of the film, the third act is really where it kind of goes, all bets are off.
Right, right.
You know, and that's where it really kind of blows the lid off of what it's being. Because, I mean, I think that's what's cool about it, though, because the first act, you have that little bit of tease, you have a couple little things here and there about what's going on in this side story? What's going on with these people in this office in the short-sleeve white shirts? And they're all, you know, talking about, you know, doing this and doing that. And you slowly start to catch on to what's happening.
Right.
And that's where the first act goes from being a horror film with some comedy, with this little thing going on in the background. Second act, you have... basically, the two different things in parallel with one another. You see a lot more
of
this behind-the-scenes thing, and you see about an equal part of the kids in the cabin. But then the third act, when the kids catch on to what's going on, and you see what they're actually doing, that's when the genre, that's when they're, I think, making that huge step into saying what this movie is trying to be.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you're right. There's two worlds that are existing in this movie that are very separate.
Yeah.
In the first and second act, and then they collide in the third. There's a problem that I have with it, though. Scream does a really good job of keeping the tone the same. Even when there's comedy, there's still a very serious tone to the Scream movies.
Sure.
This doesn't do that in a lot of ways. And sometimes the absurdity of the movie... can almost disappoint you.
Mm-hmm.
It almost borders on banana peel, slipping on banana peels and some stuff like that. But it's intentional. It's very, 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 very intentional. I was telling you earlier that it reminds me of another movie that kind of starts off the same way. Even though you may not think that it's a good movie, Richard Kelly's The Box. All right, so I love Richard Kelly. I think he's amazing. I think that he's kind of one of those people. Like, he's a voice, a unique voice in media, in that the way to conform a lot of the times is to make everything super duper coherent and on the surface for people. Whereas Richard Kelly kind of takes things that are normal and makes them absurd towards the end on purpose.
Right.
The Box was one of those movies. The premise basically was like, if you press this box, you'll get $1 million and somebody will die. Right? So that seemed normal. And then it got berserk by the end, by the third act. And that is exactly what it reminds me of. Both of them have the same thing in common. They both... got almost uncontrollable towards the end. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's funny because, I mean, like, critics love this film.
It's got like a
91% on Rotten Tomato.
Right.
But, I mean, to be honest, I feel like most audiences, even, like, I'm even hesitant to recommend it to certain friends of mine that love horror.
Right.
Because I feel like...
they will literally throw something at the screen.
They don't have any idea what they're in for. I think that...
this is almost the Drive thing. This is more extreme,
yeah.
But this is almost like the Drive thing. The whole idea that you come in with one idea of how a movie's going to be, and then you come out with a WTF look on your face and almost furious because you were manipulated.
Yeah.
Which is what they want to do. They want to manipulate. Even us telling you that you'll be manipulated won't prepare you for the manipulation that you're going to receive when you see the movie. That's how crazy it is. That's how absurd Joss Whedon and this writing is. Like, it gets to that point. To me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also kind of steps back to movies like Evil Dead, you know.
Right.
Because, I mean, those films, while being horror, genre, blood and guts, scary, there's a lot of, like, comedy and absurdity in those movies, too.
But it reeled itself in at some point. Like, yeah. This doesn't... That's the problem. It doesn't...
Well, because that wasn't... I don't think that those films were, like, at that point, at least, having the scope of what film has happened since then to now.
Right, right.
These guys are going for more of a meta take on it, you know, like trying mm-hmm. to look at all these different things, these offshoots of horror, and say what works, what doesn't, what we think about it, and let's just put it in a blender, you know, and like see what the hell happens. But I think this is a very thought out film. I mean, I think that like...
It is.
I think, at you know, even being Drew Goddard's first directorial effort, I mean, I think... a well-done movie. I mean, I think the more I talk about it and try to explain it to people, I think the challenge that I have in explaining it makes me like it even more.
Yeah, that's...
And, I mean, I think even you and I talking about it the day after, like, you know, you talking about the box and, you know, how intentional some of the stuff you felt like slash insulting some of the stuff, like the way they write the script and things mm-hmm. like that.
Maybe that's it. I just... It's like went off in my head.
A light bulb just happened.
Maybe that's what it was. It's that feeling that I had when I tried to explain what Donnie Darko was to somebody.
Right.
When I sat down, I was like, "Well, it's about a kid and a rabbit, and a plane, and death, and time travel." And somebody's like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
See the movie and you'll understand. And maybe this is one of those movies. Maybe this is going for. So obscure, so ridiculous, and it's the more I think about it, it is really well put together.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I really like this movie a lot. I mean, I don't want to sound like I like everything, and I mean, the more I think about right. certain movies, and I think there's different scope for different films. Like some movies that we talk about are kind of throwaways, but they're still fun. I think this is a different film, though. I think this is sort of like a game-changer kind of film, depending on how it's received. I'm concerned, though, with its, like, box office hope. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the word of mouth's going to be very good on the movie. I think it's one of those films that makes its way to DVD and blows up there.
Another thing, also, is it's incredibly self-aware. Like, movies aren't necessarily always presented... Yeah. Like we're in on this. You know what it also proves? It's kind of a weird thing. If Joss Whedon wanted to, he could make a horror film and it would be fucking incredible. Like just a horror film, not just a parody of a horror film. It's kind of almost like if we wanted to do it this way, we could and do it better than you can do it.
Yeah.
On top of everything else, which was weird. Because the whole tone of the first act is just like that. It's just like... A horror film should be all the cool things that a horror film should have. And they could have made it, you know, they could have had a unique way of people dying. They could have a unique way of kind of handling the story. And it could have been done that way. But I don't know, man. The more I think about it,
you liked it.
I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's that movie. You do have to think about it a little bit.
Right.
I mean, it's all on the surface a lot. You know, there's a lot on the surface and you can take it in. And I think... Unfortunately, that's what a lot of people are going to get, I think, scared away by because it is so meta and so...
It's very meta.
So out there and just, like, so many things involved. But I think that the fact that it was so well thought out, and I think that... I mean, the thing, you know, we didn't even talk about really is, like, the acting. I mean, the acting is... It's decent. Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford are great in it. They're the two little scientist guys. They get a lot of the laughs. You know, the actors, you know... Everyone playing the stereotypes.
Right. I also like Truman, the random security guard that was in the office. Yeah. I mean, because he's kind of like, he reminded me of kind of the why should these movies be like that?
Yeah. He's like, you know the reason, I mean? Almost.
Yeah, he's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, well,
why are you doing that? Or, right.
Yeah, why are we...
Do you feel bad about that? Or you know,
it's like, so weird, man. It's like a bigger... It almost reminds me of a, like those... jokes, like those big jokes about God, like, I know it's weird, but like all these elements that make a good joke, it's like the setup, the story, and then you realize that the joke is a lot about a lot more than just that instance of the, you know, whatever.
Then the punchline, yeah.
The punchline is horror films. It is what the genre has become. And this is a healthy reminder that things can be good. Things can be different.
That's it right there. Things can be different and still be good.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, I feel like that's what you take out of this film. I think getting away from like what these filmmakers obviously are trying to a little bit poke fun at, you know, also kind of challenge you with is like that torture porn thing, which I'm not a huge fan of, you know.
I hate it, man.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know. I can't get in like the Saws and the Hostels. I mean,
you know, I love Saw though.
Yeah, I can't.
Saw. Saw isn't so much torture porn as so much as Hostel. Hostel is like
Hostel is
extreme.
Yeah,
torture porn.
But I don't know. I think there's a lot of work here, and I think it's really well done. I mean, I think it's a movie I definitely want to see again, and I'm gonna probably take a couple of my friends to see it that are in the horror films, and kind of I'm anxious to see their reactions to it. But I would say, like, if you're gonna go see it and you like horror films, know that it's not three acts of horror. You know, no. You have pieces of horror throughout the whole film. But, I mean, be prepared for some challenges, some things that will make you shift a little bit in your seat and say, you know, I thought I was coming to a horror movie. Like, what's going on right now?
Right.
Prepare for a little bit of that. Because I think if you don't set yourself up, you know, by researching it or, like, you know, we try to not give a lot away on this podcast. But, I mean, the more reviews you read, you know, if you don't do that, I think you'd be better off. But the one expectation that I would set is that, no, that it's not, you know, an hour and 40 minutes of a horror film like
right.
Texas Chainsaw or, you know, whatever, Cabin Fever. Cabin Fever is a movie that I think even made kind of tapped into this kind of horror, you know, with the elements of humor and how absurd it gets at the end and things like that. But, you know, just be ready for that. I mean, and be willing to go for, you know, this little ride that these filmmakers are trying to remind us about horror. I think I think you hit it on the head. Horror can be good and be different still. I mean, I think you can make a different kind of horror movie and not have to stick to a formula, especially if it's trendy, and still make it effective.
I mean, there were a decent amount of jumps in the movie theater. Like, there were some people, like, jumping still.
And that's the thing. I think you could watch this movie. I mean, you could watch an audience watching this movie without knowing the movie they were watching and a couple times question yourself, like, what kind of film are they watching? You know, because in the first, like, 20 minutes, there's a couple big jumps.
Right.
But then, you know, the rest of the film, there's a lot of laughter, too. You know, and uncomfortable laughter, too, at that. So it's like, it's a nice mix, and it kind of goes, and that's the journey the film takes. It goes from those straightforward scares to more of the scariness by what's actually happening on the screen. And, like, did that just happen? Or can't believe I just saw that. Like, that's so out of left field. Kind of things. But I mean, the movie's getting lots of love. It comes out in theaters this weekend. Finally, glad to see it come out 3 years later, nearly. Fans of horror, go check it out. I think you're going to enjoy it a lot. I definitely was a big fan, and I can't wait to see it again. Do you have anything else to throw in there for Cabin in the Woods, Ronald?
Nah, man, see it. I think it's a really, really solid movie, and I think that it challenged me in a way that I didn't think it would, which is a good thing, man.
I feel like the day after, you were, like, hating on it like crazy.
I was. I mean,
I think you were just, I think the whole script and the, like you were saying, like, it kind of challenged you and kind of made you a little insulted by, like, what it was saying or...
Yeah, sometimes...
About the genre and maybe even what you expect from the genre.
Sometimes you gotta sit back, shut your brain off, and just take something in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that sometimes because I've seen so many movies, I like to consider myself kind of sharp when it comes to certain things. But that has no bearing on just enjoying a movie.
Sure.
Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Agreed.
So, go see it. I think it's a great movie.
Cool beans. Okay, it's in theaters this weekend. We're going to move to our DVD quick picks. I'm going to jump off right now since we're talking about Drew Goddard. I'm going to talk about a film called Cloverfield. I mentioned Drew's relationship with J.J. Abrams. Drew wrote the film Cloverfield. J.J. Abrams produced it. Came out in 2008. I know a lot of people remembered, like, the teaser trailers that played, you know, after the Transformer film of the footage in the subway in New York City. Poster's pretty slick with the Statue of Liberty kind of ripped to shreds, and you can kind of see New York in the distance. Really cool found footage film. I'm a fan of found footage movies. Kind of interested to see how each one has a take on the genre. Like creature features, like New York. So, I mean, everything added up for me. This has been on DVD for a bit, but I wanted to just throw it out there, mainly because of Drew's involvement with it, with Cabin in the Woods being his first directorial film. The funny thing was that this movie actually came out just about a year before Cabin in the Woods was made. So had Cabin in the Woods came out when it should have, you know, it's almost you wonder maybe if his career would have taken off with the momentum coming from Cloverfield, which brought in over $170 million worldwide at the box office for a pretty small film that didn't cost anything to make, like $20 million to make or something like that, $25 mm-hmm. million. Really cool found footage film.
It's one of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, I love it. Watched it multiple times. One of the first movies I watched, one of my first hangout sessions with my girlfriend. It's good.
Really?
Good stuff. Yeah, Cloverfield.
Great stuff. Viral campaign.
Love it. Love it.
Everything about that movie was well done.
So. Definitely see it if you haven't.
Yeah. Mine is not quite as... So I'm going to do Richard Kelly's The Box.
You're going to talk about... You just got to talk about it more.
I got to talk about it more.
Just more.
I think that everybody should see a movie that goes from normal premise to absurdity. And this is one of those. So
I think... Let me just say real quick before you get into your love for The Box. That was probably the one instance in my life that I remember leaving the theater saying what the fuck happened out loud. Excuse my language.
Yeah.
But I was with that movie for about half to two-thirds.
Right?
And I was like making reasons and excuses to stick with it while my girlfriend was like, what the hell is going on? We need to leave. Let's go get lunch. I'm like, no, this is that. I'm like explaining it to her and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then... I don't know, man. That was one of the movies I remember being like, oh my God, what in God's name? Did Richard Kelly just be like, I'm Richard Kelly. I make crazy fucking movies. I'm going to just make a movie that just blows your mind because it makes no sense.
I think that's one of those movies.
Like, well, then he can check that off his bucket list because that movie's done.
Clearly this man was on acid when he wrote this movie.
Obviously.
It was so crazy.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just
it's cool, but I think that's what's so cool about it. I think we all should watch movies that make us feel like that sometimes. Because you'll never forget it. You'll never forget how ridiculous it escalated to.
So you can appreciate the sweet more by having a taste of the sour.
You can appreciate a reasonable pace to a film. Because this had no reasonable pace. I mean, so, I don't know The Box. I'm not even gonna... So, Cameron Diaz is in it. James Marsden. How do you pronounce this guy's name?
Frank Langella.
Yeah, Langella. Okay.
Langella.
I was going to say Langella. Jillian Jacobs. a bunch of people from Donnie Darko. So check it out. I think this might actually be on Netflix.
Another one of those movies, type of movie. You can't really explain. If you try to explain it, either you would hurt yourself, hurt somebody else.
It's a cool premise.
What you said earlier is an awesome premise. And the trailer for it was like, hey, this movie looks really cool. And then people go see it opening weekend and like dropped like 80-something% the second weekend of opening because the word of mouth was like, this is what exactly the word of mouth was. Stay away from this movie. Save your money and go buy dinner for yourself.
I'm wondering, see, the thing is because that was his last work, I'm wondering if he's going to come out with more stuff. I want him to. I love Richard Kelly.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll come out with more. He's probably still kind of walking around with his tail between his legs for that.
Yeah, it looks like the next movie he's releasing comes out in 2013.
Right. I don't know. The Box is a mind...
It's a mind-boggling movie. But so is the movie we just reviewed. Cabin in the Woods is...
The key difference, and this is just my opinion, with The Box and Cabin in the Woods, if you're going to compare the two, is that... In The Box, I feel like you struggle to stay with it and or even even commit to how ridiculous it becomes. Where with Cabin in the Woods, I think where that third act kicks in, I think you're enough into what the meat of this movie is that whether or not you like it or go with it or whatever, you are at least going to, you know, ride it out. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like with Box, a lot of people that I saw the movie with, I can remember, like, handfuls of people leaving that movie. And I think, like, two people left the screening that we went to for Cabin in the Woods. I counted a couple people walk out. But I think for the most part, the way it slowly unfolds and transitions into what the real story is, which is not these kids in the conventional horror film, where I felt like the box was like, it was almost like a bait and switch. It went from like a box to an alien into water and all kinds of shit. Like, what? What?
I mean, I don't know. I can't. There's nothing to really say about
it. We can't say words.
Can't say words.
You can't express it with words.
You're gonna watch.
So we're going to just look at the mic right now and have a moment of silence to let our brains tell you what happens in the box. That's all it took right there.
Yeah.
We just told you and you're welcome.
It's strange. It is
go,
strange.
Go rent it and then email us and let us know what you think about it.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to wrap up this episode. Again, episode number 33. We talked about Bully, Cabin in the Woods, Cloverfield, and The Box, which are the later two are on DVD and or Netflix. As always, hit us up at movieschmovie.net. The Tumblr.
We're on Pinterest now.
We've been rocking the Pinterest, man. We've been getting pins, repins, likes, right. Some followers. All the ladies out there that like movies and like pins and boards.
Right.
We are on Pinterest.
Pin us.
We'll pin you. Ba-dum-ching. But yeah, and then we've always got the email address too. So if you check out any of the films that we've talked about, want to give us some feedback, we're always anxious and excited to read that. So it's just movieschmovie@gmail.com. But as always, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends. Check out the iTunes podcast, the Mixcloud account. And yeah, you guys have a great night and have fun seeing all those movies we just talked about.
Cool.
As always, you made our day. Take care.